A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler-receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
A warm, wintry welcome to the coming hour on Radio Netherlands, where the feature program is Media Network, our weekly communications magazine. This week, we explore the SW2 receiver from the Drake Company. There's an overview of the giant Comdex exhibition in Las Vegas, and vitally important news about a satellite change for Radio Netherlands Television. So stay with us for all that and more. First, current affairs, and we cross to the Radio Netherlands newsroom. By shortwave, medium wave, satellite, and the World Wide Web, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Multimedia Network, a survey of new and traditional technology connecting across borders. This edition is produced and presented by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Thanks for tuning our way, and in the next half hour we have a mixture of media news you can use as well as a long-promised test of the Drake SW2 shortwave receiver.
But we start with some important news affecting Radio Netherlands Television and the satellite we've been using up until now for analog distribution in Europe. The start of pay television test transmissions by BSkyB in the UK has meant that transponder 58 on the Astra satellite is no longer available to us.
However, as from today, there is an alternative for viewers in Europe. For between 1900 and midnight Dutch winter time, and that's from 18 to 23 hours UTC, Radio Netherlands Wereldomroep TV is available on Eutelsat Hotbird 1. It's positioned at 13 degrees east, and we are using transponder 4, at 11.283 gigahertz vertical polarization. And note that analog broadcasts have been extended from 3 to 5 hours per day, and that's in response to viewers' requests.
That transponder on Eutelsat has a super wide beam coverage. We expect that reception in southeastern Europe, including Greece, will now considerably improve. But of course, you might have to reposition your dish. Feedback from southeastern Europe would be especially welcome, directed to this email address, media@rnw.nl. And please give us details of the size of the satellite dish that you're using.
But wait, for there's more, and it affects radio. For in the next few days, Radio Netherlands radio channels will also be available on this transponder as separate mono subcarriers, and the exact frequencies will be announced shortly.
But there are also two more points to note.
Yes, the first one is that Radio Netherlands Wereldomroep TV remains on Astra in the digital mode for both television and radio. So if you are receiving us using an MPEG receiver, there is no change.
The other point is that the analog radio subcarrier of Radio Netherlands on Astra transponder 58 at 7.56 megahertz will remain in use until the end of 1997. If you missed any of those details or want to read them again, check out our homepage on the internet at www.rnw.nl.
Coming soon, Media Network investigates the revival of the long wave band. Why are stations investing below 500 kilohertz? We'll be revealing the results of our annual survey into the shortwave receiver market and telling you how it's holding up now that the sunspot numbers are finally rising. And don't forget to join us on Thursday, December 25th for the DXmas Files, strange radio tales for the festive season.
A little town of Bethlehem. Now still we see the light.
In fact, there's still time to take part by sending us your Christmas wishes and predictions for 1998. We're picking the cream of the crop for inclusion in the program. Our letterbox is always open, and Radio Netherlands answer line is open right now. The number is 31 for Holland, 35 for Hilversum, then 6724222. Join in the fun, because Radio Netherlands is all shades of opinion.
One of the largest exhibition and trade shows in the world of computers is currently underway in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. Several of our correspondents have been rather disappointed, despite the fact that just over 200,000 people are milling around more than 2,100 exhibition stands.
It used to be that the so-called Comdex was the place to be to trend watch and spot those companies working on something unique. In fact, with thousands of simultaneous product launches, if you're trying to sift through all this information, you're better off staying at home and reading the press releases on the web. On Sunday night, Bill Gates of Microsoft made a remarkably unspectacular speech glorifying the PC, but not getting into any interesting detail. But there were some points of interest.
Steve Kukuru works as a chief technology officer for a Boston-based investment firm and is currently in Las Vegas. He says there is a big shift in who attends.
Actually, Comdex has changed dramatically, I'd say, in the last 5 years or so. The actual name Comdex used to stand for Computer Dealers Exposition. And basically, I'm guessing somewhere 5 to 7 years ago, the vast majority of people that were at that show were either vendors trying to sell products or basically reps for major stores or major corporations buying in huge volume. That has shifted dramatically, I'd say, in the last 5 years. One, it's become much more international, and I mean international from everywhere in the world. You see folks from Africa, from the Pacific Islands. It's just amazing the number of folks that attend, and also the mixture. I think it's gone more toward corporate purchasers, folks who run large networks, including phone companies, and also a tremendous shift in the last 2 years or so toward consumer electronics. Your Sonys and Panasonics and companies like this have started showing up with digital still cameras, with digital video cameras, with home video editing equipment, literally priced in the $300 and $400 price range. So there's been a very large shift in terms of the number of consumer-oriented multimedia and computing products, and SOHO, small home and office products, in the last few years. So it's become, I'd say, a lot more democratic.
It's also clear that not everyone is making money. The Kodak company announced this week it was laying off 10,000 staff. This photochemical company has had difficulty breaking into the digital camera market, yet that's the only path open. People don't buy this high technology until it's cheap enough to compete with regular film.
And that costs a lot of money. Perhaps the biggest problem facing most of us is that it still costs too much to pipe all this emerging television, radio, and internet into the home.
That is truly, I think, the greatest need that's probably holding back convergence and holding back the internet and holding back home banking and e-commerce and all kinds of other things. It's simply there are so many millions and millions of people who would love to have access to these services, but there really is not a reliable, wide enough pipeline to get it in their home so that they can use it in the manner they'd like. Folks who are used to watching television, you know, full quality, gorgeous stereo television, when they look at the web at 28.8, it really doesn't have the same entertainment or excitement factor. And I think until we figure out what that bandwidth answer is, and to be honest, I'm not sure that's as much a technological problem as a business and regulation problem. It's who's going to pay the money to get that infrastructure the last 5 or 10 miles into the home, and how are we going to recoup that investment? I think that's the key problem we face now. In this country, there's a lot of folks trying to come up with solutions. You've got everything from microwave wireless internet high speed. I just had a gentleman come in the other day and offer me 27 megabit access to the web via a wireless cable box at less price than a much slower ISDN connection. You've got electric utilities talking about doing experiments where the actual electric line that powers the things in your outlet in your home will actually bring internet and video through the AC plug in your home, an adapter at very, very high rates. And that's two-way. The phone companies and electric companies are also talking about providing all kinds of home services. They'll, you know, run a fire alarm, and they'll watch your furnace to make sure it turns on properly, and they'll monitor electric usage, and all those things will be done through the same system. Who's going to win that battle, or exactly when that's going to happen? I suspect it'll shake out in the next 2 to 3 years, and I expect it will probably be some form or combination of large utilities, cable companies, and possibly even some satellites. But that is very actively being pursued, at least in this country, and it'll be interesting to see how it comes out.
Here in Europe, we've been watching developments with DirecTV, run by the Hughes Corporation, who built 60% of the world's commercial satellites. But it seems we have a long wait, because Hughes is concentrating on the Latin American market and Japan, with no immediate plans to enter the European arena. In the US, Hughes has started offering asynchronous internet access via satellite, with what's termed the Direct Duo.
That's one dish. It's a little larger than the 18-inch pizza pie dishes. But an oblong dish, you can fiberglass, park it on your roof or whatever. And that one dish brings both direct broadcast satellite, the high-resolution and high-quality Dolby stereo sound, and through the same dish, just through a different converter box, also brings very high-speed internet access, and that's exactly how it works. It is asynchronous. You basically use your phone line to put a request into the web server, and then the data comes down at very high speed back to the satellite dish. That is brand new. It really has not hit the consumer market here yet at all. They haven't been pushing it too hard, but I think in the next 2 years, that may be a very viable way to get around the cable bandwidth problem until such time as we find a wider, whether it's a copper pipe or a fiber pipe or whatever, into the neighborhoods.
Record companies are busy behind closed doors at the moment, looking at ways to get their music into your home, for price, of course. They also want to limit the vast amount of illegal taping that goes on around the world, especially in Asia and Latin America. One of the most prominent companies working on a digital download solution calls itself Liquid Audio.
I believe Liquid Audio is just about to get a deal done in Japan where you will basically give it your MasterCard or your bank card or whatever on the web and then be able to download actually an album that you can record to your hard drive as a high-quality file. And then if you've got the ability to burn a CD on your computer, you can actually basically buy the content of the CD over the web and then burn it, and you own a legal copy of it. And I think that will be extended to the jukebox philosophy, whereby you can, in a year or two, log into a record company site or maybe even a radio station site or a record store, whatever, and basically they'll be the top 50 country hits. And you'll say, okay, I want to burn my own CD. I want these 12 hits. And you'll order 12 separate songs, which will be downloaded as whatever format they choose, an MP3 or a WAV file or whatever. And then you can either play it off your hard drive to a tape to make a legal copy or burn a CD yourself or whatever, but you'll have the high quality. And rather than buying an album with 12 songs, of which you really like four, the concept of an album whereby the producer and the talent decide exactly what songs you listen to may go by the by, and instead groups will simply put out a whole bunch of, quote, singles from which you can assemble your own album.
Steve Kukuro. Some people are seriously worried about that development. For many, record stores are working on a 5 to 10% profit margin. And if web interactive or web television really catches on, it could seriously cut into that market in the next few years.
An upcoming media network will revisit the idea of being able to store radio programs downloaded from the web into a small portable device. The Audio Highway Company we featured in August still hasn't come up with the goods, but others are now running with the idea.
Award-winning Radio Netherlands, putting features first.
Joining me now with some more news items is Andy Sennett.
And first of all, thanks to Peter Fleury in Switzerland, who sent us an email pointing out an error in the Radio Netherlands schedule. Since the start of the winter broadcasting season, our evening transmission to Europe via the World Radio Network on the Astra satellite is at 19:30 to 20:30 UTC, instead of the listed 18:30 to 19:30. I checked with Jan-Willem Drexhager, head of program distribution at Radio Netherlands, and it seems that the winter edition of On Target went to press before this change was confirmed.
Yes, and that means you can hear Media Network via the World Radio Network at 19:50 UTC. And the corrected online version of the schedule is now available at www.rnw.nl.
And Diana, speaking of websites, Radio Slovakia International have expanded their website recently, and the URL is now slightly different. It's at www.slovakradio.sk/rsi.html. And I've also noticed that Centec, the signal distribution company in South Africa, is reconstructing its website at www.centec.co.za.
And Andy, I believe there's a new twist in the media war between North and South Korea.
Yes, I spotted this item from BBC Monitoring on the new website of BBC News. It seems the North Koreans are fuming about a TV drama that was broadcast on South Korean TV this past Sunday. The drama was about a North Korean defector, and Pyongyang is so angry that North Korean radio announced that retaliation would be, quote, merciless and absolute. The radio went on to say, "We will ruthlessly blow up the KBS2 TV writers group and send its existence in the air. We will also make it clear that we will kill all those who participated in writing the drama."
And presumably these threats have brought an equally strong reaction from South Korea.
Well, so far they've been quite restrained, contrasting their own democratic values with what they call North Korea's, quote, notorious reputation as a terrorist country. But it is a sobering reminder that in some parts of the world, a single TV programme can spark a war of words that could lead to something more serious.
Now, in recent months, we've had reports that broadcasting from North Korea is becoming erratic. Do you have any advice on how to keep up with the situation?
Well, yes, for those with access to the internet, Japanese DXer Sonny Ashimori has put together a personal webpage called DXing North Korea. With the continuing humanitarian crisis in that country, monitoring the media is becoming more and more complicated. Problems include random power cuts, jamming of transmissions beamed to South Korea, and the presence of numerous shortwave harmonics which can be monitored in Japan. Mr. Ashimori's webpage contains extensive monitoring reports and includes transmissions beamed to as well as from North Korea. Now, this site is probably the best way of keeping up to date with the schedules, and we do mean up to date. For example, at 15:30 UTC on the 18th of November, the page listed harmonic frequencies that had been monitored earlier that day. The URL of this webpage is www.serve.com/Ashimori, that's Ashimori, /dxnk.html. And thanks to Tom Sundstrom for drawing my attention to it.
Andy, we've had some reports that Radio Renascença in Portugal has been heard recently on several frequencies normally used by the Jülich transmitter of Deutsche Telekom. Is this a new relay agreement?
No, it's not an agreement. In fact, it was a mistake. The transmitter should have been relaying Polish radio. According to a report from Kai Ludwig, mentioned in the latest edition of the Worldwide DX Club's Hot News, Deutsche Telekom said on November the 13th, due to a switching error in our satellite receiving system, Radio Renascença was aired instead of Polski Radio. But from today, all should be right. Polski Radio 19 to 20 hours UTC on 5840 kHz beamed to Central Russia, 19:30 to 20:00 on 5850 beamed to the Ukraine, and 19 to 19:30 UTC on 5890 beamed to Northern Russia. And these test transmissions will last until November the 23rd.
Thanks, Andy.
Radio Netherlands Consumer Investigation. We dig deeper.
The American company of Drake has recently put a new receiver onto the market. It's been out in the USA for a little while, and it's now filtering onto the shelves of selected dealers in Europe. We tested an off-the-shelf example in the course of October 1997, and these are our findings.
Drake's aim has been to design a simple-to-operate synthesized receiver. It's called the SW2, and uses a traditional phase-lock loop synthesizer. It covers from 100 kHz up to 30 MHz, so if you're interested in the very low frequencies, such as 77.5 kHz, which is one of the channels used by a time signal station in Europe, then you'll need a different set. Most people, though, are interested in the broadcast portions of the dial, and these are covered continuously with no breaks. The set measures 28 by 11 by 19 centimetres and weighs in at 2.6 kilos.
Tuning is straightforward. On the front panel is a familiar-looking keypad. Tap in the channel you're looking for, and it goes directly to that frequency. You can also navigate the dial using the up and down buttons, which start off at 5 kHz steps, but increase if you keep one of the buttons depressed. The minimum tuning step is 50 Hz, which is somewhat coarser than some other sets in the same price bracket. The digital readout on the set has a resolution down to 100 Hz, which for most purposes is perfectly adequate.
And there's a selection of modes, AM for broadcast reception, AM synchronous, which should reduce the effects of certain types of fading, plus upper and lower sideband facilities for reception of those telex stations and amateur radio operators. Further on the front panel is an RF gain control to regulate the amount of signal getting into the receiver, plus there's an automatic gain control. But this AGC, as it's called, only has one setting, and unfortunately you can't switch it off. That's a shame, because if you could switch off the automatic gain control and then use the RF gain control carefully, you can often peak very weak signals out of the background noise. With a bit of practice and patience, you can do this better than the automatic gain control, but still.
On the back of the set is a connection for a 50 ohm coaxial feed to an external antenna, and also a terminal which is intended for a random long wire antenna. Now, on most receivers, this is a high impedance connection, which is needed to match the impedance of a short piece of wire. This is achieved using a matching transformer inside the receiver. But here, Drake has certainly cut costs, because this connection is directly coupled to the coaxial antenna input, and we think this is false economy.
The receiver runs on AC mains, or you could connect it to a car battery. In our bench test, the power supply failed after some hours of continuous use, but this is probably not typical. We used our own 12-volt DC power supply then, rated at 1.5 amps. We noted that even when the radio is in the standby mode, though, it consumes 1.2 amps, so unplug the supply when you're not using the radio for long periods. The radio suddenly gets warm after it's been used for a while.
The Drake SW2 has 100 programmable memories. 31 of these come already pre-programmed from the factory with popular frequencies used by international broadcasters. Not surprisingly, the channels chosen are frequencies that are beamed to North America, so that's less useful if you live in Europe. But putting your own choice of channels into the set is quite straightforward. Radio Netherlands, for instance, is programmed at 6020 kHz. The radio is designed in such a way that you can either use the tuning knob to tune through the bands, or you can trawl through the 100 memories. And if a particular memory channel is empty, the receiver skips that channel. But you can't set the SW2 to scan the bands automatically and stop on strong stations, like you can on competing sets.
For beginners, we think the display is quite friendly. Alongside the frequency, there's also a display for the memory channel number. They can also be set to show the relevant meter band, which is still announced by some international broadcasters. Drake assumed that you can only listen to broadcasters in the AM mode, because if you're listening to Radio Netherlands on 6165 kHz and switch to single sideband, the 49 disappears from the display. In SSB, the Drake SW2 shows the meter bands used by ham radio operators.
The set has an output for a pair of headphones. You can also connect an external speaker, but we note that Drake used a symmetrical output for the speaker socket. That means you'll destroy the amplifier if you earth any one of the speaker connections. That's not the problem with a loudspeaker, but you probably would do that if you connect a telex decoder or another device. You'll need an isolating transformer if you want to do this. And we're surprised that Drake doesn't warn you about this in their instruction booklet.
Now to the all-important performance. The radio has two bandwidth filters inside. One is a ceramic filter for single sideband. There's another one for the AM mode. The selectivity on AM is quite good. We note that the noise from the synthesizer spoils the figure somewhat. In AM sync, it's the same story. The single sideband filter performance is much sharper when you use the SSB mode.
Sensitivity is fine for a set of this type, on average 1.5 microvolts across the whole range. Medium wave sensitivity is not suppressed as you find on some sets, so take care if you live close to a medium wave station. You might need a medium wave bandpass filter to avoid overloading. Sensitivity on single sideband is around 0.3 microvolts.
The synthesizer inside the radio does generate noise, about the same level as you'll find on the Japan radio company NRD345 and the low HF150. More expensive receivers, like the AOR 7030, are noticeably quieter. The dynamic range of a radio is important. It tells you how well it can cope with weak and strong signals at the same time. The third-order intercept point on this set turns out to be plus 8 dB, which is not a bad figure and noticeably better than the NRD 345. But the second-order intercept point is less impressive. We think that's because Drake uses diodes in the front-end circuitry and no attenuator at the stage.
The signal strength meter is purely a tuning guide. It's not calibrated, so even the medium strength signals show up as S9 on this set. On the other hand, the automatic gain control on the SW2 is well designed and irons out the volume variations quite well. It's a shame, though, that you can't switch off the AGC, as we mentioned earlier.
Some other points. The Drake SW2 has no provision for connecting an external computer to control the radio. A plus point, though, we were very pleased with the design of the product detector. It locks easily, and you can select to listen to AM stations in the sync mode with much improved fidelity. In short, this is one of the best product detectors on a receiver of this class.
and so to the price. In Europe, there is 13% import duty and 17.5% value-added tax. Bearing in mind the dollar exchange rate is quite high at the moment, that puts the radio at around 1,800 Dutch guilders, and that's around £550 sterling.
We think that's good value, bearing in mind the competition. In the US, where prices are considerably lower for most Japanese and US-made receivers, the set is also at the right point in the market. It works out there at around $490 for most outlets. So, in short, the Drake SW2 is a good value receiver for shortwave listeners.
Media Network comes guaranteed free with every shortwave radio. This offer based on 0% financing, not responsible for reception conditions during the current sunspot minimum. Offer void where inconvenient. Some restrictions apply.
You may remember us mentioning a shortwave radio project from Ireland called Emerald Radio. We've been in contact with the organizer, Bernard Evans, because there are still problems trying to get in touch with the station. They have been announcing an address of P.O. Box 200 in Dublin, Ireland, but many letters have been returned as not listed because of internal communications problems within the Irish Post Office in Dublin.
At first, they thought the problem was connected with the lack of a postal district mentioned in the address on the air, but now it turns out to be a bit more complicated than that. But for the background, we asked Bernard, what is Emerald Radio?
It's a radio station that we set up in the senior college in Ballyfermot in Dublin. Unlike the RTE programmes, we make ours specifically for an international audience, and we take into account that they won't know general place names and things like that in Ireland or what certain politicians are. So it's specifically aimed at an international audience. And we have, as you've mentioned, we've had the service going out in shortwave. We also expect to be putting it out in satellite later on in the year. We've had it going out on the internet, and we've also have many local radio stations around the world broadcasting it terrestrially as well.
One thing's clear for the moment. The shortwave programmes have come to the end of the present series for the time being.
Those programmes have ended, yes, and via the reaction we've got to it has been pretty positive, and we would expect that we would have programs running from a whole new class of students this time next year on shortwave as well.
But they will maintain a presence on the internet using www.emeraldradio.com as the URL.
The internet will be there for a full year, and that will be an ongoing thing, and as the year goes on we will rotate programs up until 12 months time, and then we will introduce a brand new set of programs and they will rotate again for a year, and that's the way we expect it to continue.
But what about that recent problem with Emerald Radio's postbox? It's only just come to their attention that letters have been returned, not listed. They've been outraged by this error at the General Post Office and are currently dealing with the situation.
While we were getting some post, for some reason, most of it apparently was being returned again. So we have no idea what's going on. I can assure people that it has nothing to do with us. We've done everything possibly we can do on this end. And as I say, we will certainly, most certainly be taking the matter as far as we can possibly take it.
In the meantime, email is the best solution.
I would suggest they can send us email to global@emeraldradio.com.
Bernard Evans on the line from Dublin, Ireland.
And that's where we have to close down this wireless programme for another 7 days. Remember, your feedback is always welcome and helps us choose the right topics for future shows.
So, until we make another one of these, have a pleasant weekend.
Thanks to Media Network contributors worldwide for another edition of the programme. No thanks to the ionosphere.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.